Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I am not Brandon Rhodes.
You couldn't be farther from Brandon Rhodes, sir.
I need more facial hair. We are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
And who are you, sir?
My name is Logan Smith.
There we go. Thank you. And joined also by...
Tammy Strobel.
And you two represent rowdykittens.com.
That's right.
You're on our illustrious and fine broadcast. We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
We're covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles, and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communication and the internet, etc.
We would love to have you send us our input. We got an email address. It's thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. We also have a phone number. It's 503-847-9774, which you can call and tell us your stories of how you're simplifying your life and what you've been doing out there on your bicycles. It's good to be here. We are missing Brandon Rhodes. He is out of town this weekend, so he's not here. I think we're going to try and Skype him in just to say hello in a little bit here, but... I actually spent the weekend down in Eugene with my wife. She ran the Eugene Marathon, and not only the half marathon, which she was planning on doing, but also the full 26-mile marathon, which ends in a big tent with much ado and aplomb and a big tent where they make pancakes. But she didn't eat the pancakes. That was the thing. By the time I got there, I was pretty hungry, and I was thinking, man, I could use some pancakes right now.
Yeah,
but I didn't want to say anything because, you know, she had just done this amazing thing with 26 miles of running and all that.
You're having sympathy pains, though.
Yeah.
You gotta.
It's true.
Yeah, you're like, you can see the calories just ebbing from her, and you really needed to eat them for her. You know?
Right. You gotta put some more good things into your body.
Yeah.
But that was actually the first time I've spent anything more than I would say a couple hours in the actual city of Eugene. Hmm. And have you two been down there?
Oh, yeah.
Spend some time. Eugene
have
is...
I been there? I don't think so.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe not. But pass through on the train, I guess. We need to visit. We need to do a bike tour down there.
We should.
Yeah. Well, Eugene is a fantastic place to do some bicycling. We stayed with my friend Tato down there, and he gave us a place to stay and made us breakfast and everything. It was very hospitable. And he may actually even be listening to this. I think he learned of the existence of this podcast when we stayed with him. But I'd always said that there's a couple places I would like to live on the West Coast, either Bellingham. Olympia made it onto the list later because I found out that it was crunchier than I thought it was. Eugene, Oregon, or Arcata, California. And all those places, whether you happen to be a hippie or whether you just happen to be a simple person who loves living in a town where hippies exist, those all seem like good places to be. And I always thought the Eugene was a place that I wouldn't necessarily choose because there's not as many public transit lines that run to and from. There's a lot of great public transit there.
Mm-hmm.
And also a lot of controversy about transit, but that's a whole other story.
Right.
They're not so connected to the other cities. Like you can get there by Greyhound and mm-hmm. you can get there by Amtrak, which is the way we went. We went by Amtrak. Okay. Actually, Amtrak through a coach, which is kind of like Greyhound for Amtrak.
And then the marathon. Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah, they have Wi-Fi on the buses too.
Oh, sweet.
But basically I realized that the transit lack isn't actually that big of a deal because once I got there, Eugene is so awesome, I could actually stay there and never want to leave. And those options would be just fine for me. So,
I met a great couple from Eugene. What was it? Friday night, Russ and Laura had their big presentation for the launching, which you guys are interviewing them next week.
Russ and Laura, the pathlesspedal.com.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They actually still have their, is it Kickstarter? Which site are they using to raise funds with?
Indiegogo.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're still raising money for their trip. So if you are interested, we have a little link to their fundraising site. It's a panel on our website leading to their website to raise funds for a huge trip across America by train and folding bicycle. If you got a couple bucks kicking around, you want to throw it at a good cause, advocacy, simply for advocacy, simply for a better quality of life, they've got a good thing going. So check out our website right down below, all the rest of our links on the sidebar. But I'm sorry, I cut you off. You were saying that they...
Oh, yeah. A couple that came all the way up from Eugene just to attend Russ and Laura's presentation at Clever Cycles for their Path Less Pedaled launch here May 15th. But you guys will hear all that detail information next week. Right,
we're going to get all the juicy details
and
from them.
So it was Lane and Kara Kagi of Setma Rex that been
which you've mentioned to me, I think, before.
Yeah, they did do a radio show. They just finished their big variety show thing that they did for a long time. So,
is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to have to look into that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's nice. Funny. That's the same couple. So they were great. We own some bike products that they make, handmake there in Eugene.
Uh-huh.
So it's really cool to meet them finally. They're really good people.
I wish I could have been there. I missed it.
I'm a big fan of anything handmade and anything bikey. So that sounds like the perfect combination.
Mm-hmm.
And if they know Russ and Laura, I get the feeling that they're probably good people, just all the way around. So
yeah, maybe an idea for a future podcast.
Yeah, we're gonna have to search that out. Speaking of upcoming shows, I should probably read off what's coming up so I don't have to patch it in later. It's Russ and Laura, of course, next week with the PathlessPedal.com, as we mentioned. After that, May 15th, Michael Anderson of Portland Afoot, who I think my wife actually bumped into him as he was delivering some of his awesome little Portland Afoot magazines. May 22nd, our friend Meredith Stewart is going to tell us a little bit about transit travel and an epic transit journey that she took that went wrong. Stay tuned. But it turned out okay in the end.
Hey, yeah, all right.
I'd probably just kill all the suspense. Oh, well. And then May 29th, Ryan J. Lane, a photographer and musical artist, and he's the guy who does our snappy little theme song with the whistling. So he's going to come in, and I would imagine we could convince him to sing a couple of his songs for us. And so that's what we got coming up.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be a good day. It's going to be a good month. You really do have Brandon's cues right down to the science, I would think.
That was bottle opening. We're drinking Black Butte Porter tonight.
That's right, yeah. And we actually also have the Aloha series from Kona Brewing Company. And this is the Wailua wheat ale brewed with passion fruit, which sounds really interesting. It's I guess it's probably like a Hefeweizen with passion fruit. So I'll give that a shot.
Sounds exotic.
Yeah. Speaking of the Kona Brewing, this was given to me. I picked up the six pack of the Black Butte from our local corner emporium, but the Kona Brewing was given to me by my friend Allison earlier today, and she actually called the show. So I think we're going to play a truncated version of her message now.
Hey, Sprocket Podcast. This is Allison, your neighbor. Just wanted to let you know that because I've been listening to your podcast, I was inspired today to reach for my bike helmet instead of my car keys for my little trip out to get my hair cut and stop by the thrift store. And helmet hair notwithstanding, I did enjoy the ride. And I did manage to strap my thrift store purchases onto my bike with the use of my bike lock and a plastic bag. I had gone out without really thinking about how I was going to get my newly acquired possessions home if I found any. Because you know how it is with a thrift store. You never actually know if you're going to find anything or not. So I wasn't really thinking ahead until I came out of the store with an armload of stuff. But it all worked out, and it was great, great weather, good riding. So thanks for inspiring me to spend more time on my bike. Been enjoying the shows. Keep having fun. Bye.
Speaking of people that wrote into the show, there's also a Facebook message that I received from Michelle here in Portland, who I think as you two were arriving, she sent the message. And she said, you know, it's a nice touch that you sent me a message, you know, unless it's automated. And I assure you, Michelle, I'm speaking to you right now as you're listening to the show and catching up on all the other ones that it's not automated. I sent that out of the goodness of my own heart. And we are seriously glad to have you as a part of the Sprocket listener family. So thanks for listening. Well, we should roll into, I'm trying to remember what else I put on the notes here. Nothing. We should roll into headlines.
All right.
So let me cue that real quick, and then we'll jump right into it.
Oh, yeah. Awesome music intro.
That's right. Hurt Bird, of course, the local Portland band that provided
what
this track.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. It circles around the city lights.
The first thing we've got here is the web blog EcoVelo. Logan, you actually sent this on here earlier last week, I think. You want to tell me a little bit about this?
Sure. EcoVelo or EcoVelo is a site
so many
run.
Pronunciations.
Yeah, I don't know. If you're French, I guess you might have right presentation. I don't know. Just say it how you want to say it. Alan Bernard and Michael Bernard have a site, and they are in Roseville, just outside of Sacramento. We met them when we used to live there. And it's a wonderful website, fantastic photography. If you're into bicycle photography at all, he is just outstanding on his... He'll get you to ride a bike just by looking at a picture.
It's true. I remember when I was there, his bicycle in particular, I mean, it's probably the one he has to work with most often, but it's a beautiful machine, placed beautifully and photographed beautifully. It's really good stuff.
He finds the really fantastic articles as well on health, on commuting, and he's always talking about the fun of commuting and mm-hmm. And actually, he commutes into Sacramento, which is a pretty decent commute. It's probably 40 or 50 miles, and he does multimodal.
One way. Wow.
So he does multimodal by hopping onto the train, and he's got a folding bike, a Brompton, similar to the Path Less Pedaled folks.
That takes a big piece of the worry out of taking your bike on the bus.
Because mm-hmm.
Those racks always only have, they have three up in Seattle and other legitimate, world-class cities. Mm-hmm. Portland, unfortunately, not a world-class city. They only have two spaces on their bike racks. But
oh, they'll get there.
Eventually.
This article in particular, he was crunching some numbers and some math and the costs of bike commuting relative to car ownership, because AAA just released their how much it costs to own a car total for an average American. And he crunched those numbers relative to what a cyclist or a car-free person would actually would go through, and made the numbers and came up with you can give yourself a $4 raise if you switch to riding a bike. And that includes the cost of purchasing a bike and maintaining a bike in relative to a car.
Which is not bad. I mean, I would take a $4 raise any day.
Yeah.
I think the thing I sent you by email, Logan, is just the fact that I've already done that, and so I have nowhere to go but down, apparently, financially. anything I buy from my bike just puts me more in the hole. But there are worse problems you could have. So
that's true.
That was that. Next story up, we had from Boston.com. You also sent me this story, Logan, about the Kryptonite U-Lock company that is introducing a new anti-theft sort of mm-hmm. approach. What is social media and barcodes?
Mm-hmm.
And I just got to look at this briefly, so perhaps you should explain this as well.
Oh, apparently they are selling an ID kit with their U-Locks now. I believe it's Kryptonite that's doing it. And you get a little sticker barcode that you can put on your bicycle, and that is registered in their online registry.
Nice.
And when someone reports that their bike has been stolen, it goes into their registry and they tweet it and they put it on their Facebook, and it actually will go into registry for iPhones and that sort of thing. So if someone sees a bike that they suspect is stolen, they take a picture of the barcode sticker on the bike. The app will actually scan the barcode and check against the registry to see if that bike has been stolen.
Right. That's a nice use of technology. I mean, there's a lot of ways that social media has actually complicated our lives, like Farmville, for example. If you can't get enough of the chores, as they are in the real world, you can also do chores virtually in your free time. But, that is one good use of people being connected and interconnected and mm-hmm. paying attention to what's happening. And it does seem like that could be a really nice deterrent. Mm-hmm. To theft. I guess the only thing I was wondering as I was reading it was if it's just a sticker, I assume it must be a really good adhesive. But
right.
I suppose eventually someone's going to get wise to the system and peel the sticker off. So unless right. you hide it inside your seat tube or poster,
yeah, then
or something
someone
like
need to
that.
Take it off to check it out or something. Yeah, I have to read a little further to see what exactly. Pretty much it's just one more tool for the toolbox for
yeah.
you to be able to recover something in the future if some opportunistic thieves just tries to flip something on Craigslist real fast and
right.
just cleans up the bike but doesn't remove a sticker, then work out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and that happens probably more often than anyone would like, just the idea that you've always got someone who needs a hit of something, and so they end up hitting somebody else and taking their bike, and then that's the end of that story.
Mm-hmm.
Until the bike gets sold to some other guy for $40.
Right.
So that happened to us a couple times. Once was... several years ago, but we were like on our way somewhere early on a Saturday morning, stopping at Fred Meyer over on Hawthorne and what is now Cesar Chavez, used to be 39th Avenue. There was a fellow that I think we were buying gloves because we were on our way to work on something. And a fellow outside the store just said, "Hey, got a bike. You want it? $40. And it was easily like, you know, like a $1,000 bicycle. It was very, very expensive. And so
wow.
Now there are barcodes. Now there are phones that take pictures of barcodes and they'll even tell you like, you know, where the spaghetti sauce is cheapest. So that's cool.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
Yeah. Good stuff. Move on to the Oregonian. I had the hard drive columnist, Joseph Rose, had an article about the bike and ride facility over at Transit Sunset Center, I believe, which is below capacity. I think they said that it would pay for itself if 8 bicycles parked there every day. Huh. And the average is something like 1.5 bicycles parking there every day.
Oh,
so
we can improve that.
Yeah. it's a sad story with the way that transit funding has been happening here in Portland, because transit funding, of course, it's always it's been contentious, and service is being cut, and there's a big train on the west side that a lot of people don't like. I rode it. I thought it was great, but I mean, it's way over there and I'm way over here, so what can you do? But the bike and ride, apparently, it was built by TriMet, the transit authority, and apparently not as many people are using it as they had hoped, but
gas prices are still rising.
It's true. Yeah.
Know.
Well,
here we go.
That we can only hope that it keeps on going up and more people choose a different mode of transport. There was another story, and I think Jonathan Moss found this in one of his weekly roundups of news stories from around the world. I think Seoul had an incredible number of people bicycling, and they were offering incentives, I believe. I think it was a discount on your transit if you were coupling that with bike usage. So it was very similar. I think it was like a bike and ride thing, if I remember correctly. And you could bring your bike in, lock it up. I'm grasping at straws here. I can't say 100% this is true, but as I remember, I think the access card for the bicycle parking facility might have been the same card you use for your transit fares. And so it did all the calculations automatically for you. And if you...
incentives.
Exactly.
I love that, yeah.
You park your bike, and then you take it out the end of the day. It just gives you a break on your transit fare. So.
Yeah, terrific.
Good
Ellie Blue usually does the Bike Portland Monday News Roundup. She finds some really terrific stuff, international things.
I am impressed. Yeah. And of course, we always do thank Jonathan Moss for putting together a fantastic site and for giving us permission to use so much of his content and link to it. There was a thing we had the Bike Portland get together at Lentz Commons out here in Southeast Portland. And I was actually, my picture was featured on that story because I went. So that was exciting. And there's a link to that there. If you haven't already checked out bikeportland.org, go check it out. It's a fantastic site. And the last thing, there's a couple more things. Just real quick, the sign company that Bike Portland featured. There's a fellow here in town that has been doing business by bicycle, or primarily moving things by bicycle, for about 20 years, and he makes signs. It's a good deal, and he's been at it for a long time, so that's a cool story there. We'll put a link up to that. And then, last but not least, there's a story about a fellow that did a study in the suburbs and said that walking and bicycling can actually thrive in the suburbs if you have the right conditions. If there are, if there's pass-throughs, there's ways to get from your apartment complex to the next apartment complex, out to the main road, and then out to the shopping center. Actually, more people statistically walk and ride than in some parts of some major cities. So it's pretty impressive, but that's some good stuff there. So those are our headlines for this week on The Sprocket, and we're going to wrap that segment. Oh, the last thing, I'm sorry, Bike Commute News. Logan, you want to tell us a little bit about that as well?
Oh, yeah. So Bike Commute News is a Twitter feed, basically set up by a fellow on, I believe he's outside of LA, and he just always loved reading all the hashtag information.
I love hashtagging.
Hashtag is basically
a way to... I actually don't ever hashtag, but I love the idea of it.
Yeah, it is popular. So
I just suck at Twitter. That's what I do.
All right. He loved reading all about bike news, so he was trying to track all these different hashtags, and then he realized, hey, why don't I just, instead of retweeting these things on my own on my own Twitter feed. Why don't I generate one Twitter feed and then people can subscribe to it and just get these occasional updates about international bike news, national bike news, and different things that are going on. So it's a wonderful resource to check out.
Yeah, it's a good idea. And it's bite size, right? Like it's just a little like, hey, here's a story about commuting.
Right.
And can you subscribe to Twitter things like on your mobile phones these days? I hear that there are people that do that, but I don't know how it works. I like the idea that you could get news sent to your phone about commuting as you're commuting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if you have like an iTouch, you can get the TweetDeck app and filter it in that way.
Mm-hmm. You might be able to do RSS too, to someone's page, and then probably kind of like a blog thing. And
if anyone was born before 1930, they have no idea what we're talking about.
Acronyms are flying like just past everywhere.
Back in the day, yeah, when I was part of the ROTC. Anyways, that's good stuff. So thanks for passing that along. And
happy to.
So we're going to move into introducing our guests, of course. It's Tammy Strobel and Logan Smith, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm just going off of memory there, which sometimes doesn't always serve me well. But representatives of rowdykittens.com. We actually have an official fanfare this time around. I loaded some sound. And so would you like a more of a classic movie fanfare or more of a royal fanfare? Or a gong.
The gong sounds kind of ominous. I don't know.
I'll try it out and see if it works. Okay, ready, set. Tammy and Logan from rowdykittens.com.
That was awesome.
It's good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us tonight.
It beats Brandon's goat fanfare.
It's true. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that was a fanfare for my bad joke, and I think I deserved it. Either that or I was falling down on the job. One of the other. But so anyways, here we are. You guys were kind enough to come out and join us, and it's good to have you here. So you should tell us, first of all, I believe you were thinking about talking some about your downsizing story. You've done some considerable downsizing for how most people live their lives. So
we have.
How did that work, and what kind of brought that about?
Well, when did this start? 5 years ago? Six?
Yeah, about that. Yeah, it's been a while.
So in essence, I was really unhappy at my job. I was in the investment management world. Not a good fit for me.
Right. That's a tricky thing to stay happy in.
Yeah. So, and we were in debt. I was overweight, just kind of, I was depressed. And I'm like, well, why am I unhappy? I should be happy. You know, I have everything I could want. I'm married to my best friend. Life should be good. And Logan's like, well, you know, let's try and reduce our stress, pay off the debt. Why don't we downsize? And I looked at him like, what the hell are you talking about? I don't want to downsize.
It's the un-American way.
I have to give up my stuff. What? So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I grew up on a cattle ranch, actually, way out in rural California. And it was always the best way to double your money is by folding it in half and putting it back in your pocket. So
that's a classic way to do it.
Yeah.
I did that this morning, actually.
Very, very simple way. Yeah. And so thinking about that, we were living in a 2-bedroom apartment at the time. We had two cars. Tammy was commuting 2 hours a day. So our expenses were really high relative to where we wanted to be. So we decided that instead of having Tammy work more, I was actually going to school at the time and going to University of California, Davis. And we were living in a bike city, USA, and driving two cars. So, you know, try and figure that out. Yeah.
So
kind of feeling a bit out of place, like sore thumbs or something.
Well, not necessarily. Davis is an interesting community because there are a lot of cyclists, but there are also a lot of, you know, commuters. It's kind of a bedroom community. People go into San Francisco and into Sacramento and they drive. So I didn't feel out of place driving everywhere, but it's kind of silly, you know, looking back. There's no reason we couldn't be cycling. Mm-hmm. We're healthy, able-bodied, get on the bike, you know?
Right. And as I understand, there's a lot of improvements for cycling down there.
Oh, yeah.
We were talking earlier about Jeff Mapes before we started recording, and that he did some great coverage of kind of what Davis is like,
right?
Which was inspiring to me. So
I believe it was the first town in the United States to have bike lanes. And
the very first.
the origin of the mountain bike, although it's controversial where exactly it was supposedly invented in
everyone
Davis,
says
California.
Marin County.
Yeah, yeah, of course. But,
possibly Davis.
Yeah. Okay. Who knows? Everyone kind of claims those sorts of things. But so the short story of our downsizing experience was that we were unhappy. We were living the American dream. We were newlyweds. You know, we had these flashy rings and we had all this stuff and had a nice apartment and living kind of in a burbia kind of area. And then we realized, you know, even though we have all this stuff and we're wealthy and we're living the American dream, to, you know, young professionals, we realized, hey, we're not happy at all. We need to make some changes and start going towards the things that make us happy. So, getting out of debt was our main goal. And, so we, sold one car and I started taking my bike to school and we moved into a one bedroom apartment to try and, downsize everything and from a two bedroom apartment. And then eventually we moved into a studio in, Sacramento. And,
that's an impressive move. A studio is a tough thing, I think, for, especially for two people. I think maybe it could be done for one, but for two people, it seems like that, was that difficult? Was that a crazy experience?
Well, not really, because like, you know, this has happened over like 6 years.
Sure.
So with
doing
every
it in steps.
Yeah, it's like every move we get rid of more and more stuff. And so it doesn't feel like super cramped in our apartment, although we're going to be building a tiny house this summer. And so,
yeah, we're going to have to have you tell us more about that later on.
But we're going through another like downsizing process right now, trying to figure out what do we need to keep? What do we need to donate?
And to give everyone a perspective, the two bedroom apartment that we're living in 5 or 6 years ago was about 1200 square feet. And then we downsized to a one bedroom, which was about 700 square feet. And then from there, the studio was about 400 square feet. And up here, when we moved from Sacramento to Portland, we're currently living in a large studio, also
400-ish
about 400. But the tiny house that we'll be talking about later, it's about 100 square feet.
Is that right?
Yeah.
With a loft.
Yeah, with a loft. So you can add that in there.
That's impressive. And I guess it's kind of the baby steps approach. Like if you do it gradually, you're doing maybe better steps and more effective steps than you would if you just kind of try to ditch everything at once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe it's kind of like maybe trying to get off of anything that you might be in some way addicted to or couldn't live without. Like, you know, if you try and go cold turkey, a lot of times cold turkey doesn't work.
Totally.
I remember I was watching one of those hoarders shows. They look into the lives of people who just amass tons and tons of stuff. And the idea that you can't go in there and just rip everything out of somebody's hands because that doesn't
Work.
Yeah.
It's totally traumatic.
It's a violent experience.
Folks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, well, that's good. You guys took the time and you've been doing it slowly. So.
Yeah, it's been good. And I think, at least for us, the best part of downsizing is really, you know, having more time and money. And in turn, we can volunteer and give our money to charity. And like, we weren't able to do that stuff before, which is really ridiculous because we were making quite a bit of money, but yet, you know, on the little treadmill going 90 miles an hour. So
work spend.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So we make less, but give more. And that's kind of cool. So.
Yeah. And giving, I'm a big fan of giving. If people have needs or just, you know, you want to give something to somebody cause it's fun.
Yeah.
It's oftentimes a lot more fun than trying to accrue things for yourself. So,
and you've actually recruited us to change our tactic. We formerly known for everyone listening that Brock had been calling me his rich uncle for donating roughly $1 per episode, a very high sum of $1 per episode so far. And so we've changed tactics since that's a little bit steep on this, way too much money for Brock and Brandon. So we just donated to the Wrench Raiders since you had them on their show.
And as I was saying, if you're only going to give one direction, give to them first because they're doing something good with what they got.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Well, thank you. That's good to know that. I'm sure they know that the donation came in, but I should make sure that I tell CJ that you guys are big supporters. So
it's cool. A terrific project.
I have yet to get down on a Sunday and see them in action, but I'm still hoping to do that one day. But well, we should put a break in the program real quick here. I've got someone who was suggested by Blaine up on Vancouver Island, C.R. Avery. He's a spoken word, and I'm not sure if hip hop is the right descriptor or not. It sounds kind of hip hop to me, but I think he probably would identify more as a poet than as anything else. But C.R. Avery out of Vancouver, B.C., and this track is called Motel. It's from his recent album release, So It Goes. You can find him at cravery.com.
some more. Seen and hear my trembling voice. I got a tale to tell. I'm down out in Paris like George Orwell, aka Eric Blair. Each gray hair may be counted, but not every Broadway play gets mounted. Every vision is a quest. What precision I may manifest? Yes, I was young when I left home. The rambling roam round with the wind jam, the windmill, and I'm still a Ghana for honor. Ready to rip up a picture of the Pope like Sinead O'Connor. Car performance poetry. No one understanding me. A gay parade to try to get a response since Tour de France. My breakfast consists of baguette and stale croissants. Steve Malone, when it rains, bread crumbs, coffee stains, endless cigarettes, regrets are plenty, hindsight 2020. I'll be across the ocean, though I had the notion to abandon ship on the whole trip, and there's no time to quit. I'm so tired of uninspired shit. In the night, you must excite the nipple at the delicate tip of the titch and zip it down the spine and down around a bit. Explicit for a radio hit, it's longer, stronger, exquisite. As she slipped out of the night, I got a motel room 50 miles out of town. Lord, just can't seem to quit this rambling round. I've been holding up in a motel room 50 miles out of town. Out of town.
Walls came down with these, but left standing in these black and white categories. You can look near the camp, you got a humble fan to ramp down upon your knees. Frustrated Hendrix from the band of gypsies. Order spreading, play Monterey back from the MGs. Aretha Franklin, play film, West Watch, special guessing on keys. To be a crossover artist is more complex than Ulysses. I'm in a Kitchenese van in my frying pan of grilled cheese. Sing about the kid on the street, sing the burned CDs. To the rappers with the fiddle bam on the Grammys. To the pioneer prodigal hits in the early 80s. Then there were these, or battle trophies, university degrees. It's over to success with no apologies. But I cannot deny, got my roadmap clues in the Delta blues, of the world to the breeze and leaves in the trees. From this metal to the ghetto blast of master ceremonies. You gotta commence, gotta cross on the lake to freeze. As this nut beats per minute and knowing your ABCs. I asked on a cone, how lonely did it get for you? He replied, I didn't move to New York till I was 32. I'm just in room 406. Listen to the rain now.
I got a motel room.
Welcome back to the Sprocket Podcast. We're going to give a quick little jingle to our friend Brandon and see if he picks up his phone. So, and we're going to see if this works. So we're dialing him now.
I have to say that, you know, you guys come off as Luddites on the podcast, but you got a pretty technical...
Don't tell anybody. Don't want you to know. We got cables and wires going everywhere here. It's...
Hey, Brock.
Hey there, Brandon. How are you?
I am doing good.
Excellent. Hey, we forgot to call you when the show started, so we're halfway through now and just calling to say hello.
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
Happy weekend to you. How's Seattle?
Seattle is gorgeous and sunny and full of life and bright tree petals all over the place. It's great up here.
That sounds great. How was your train ride? Did you have any cool experiences while you did that?
I guess cool, that word will work for it. Yeah, there was a guy, there was like an 80-year-old Russian guy at the back of my car who was talking in his cell phone with it on speakerphone, and both he and the guy on the phone were like just barking at each other in Russian for about an hour out of the 3 hours up.
Wow. So the conductor never
came by?
It was
really funny because like you could hear people murmuring to each other, like, what do? How do we get him to, like, be a little bit more discreet or whatever? And people just kind of resolve that he's an old gypsy man and there's no hope. And so...
you take what you can get and I guess, scratch off the rest. Well...
Yeah.
Well, we're here with Tammy and Logan, and they're just they're telling us a little bit about their simple life, so...
Logan's our rich uncle.
Well, yeah. Yeah, he actually...
Hi, Brandon.
He kind of qualified that as maybe... He's actually our benefactor friend who just donated to Rent Raiders. So,
oh, great!
Yeah, yeah,
great.
He's a good man. Anyways, we're gonna.
What are you guys drinking?
We've got the Black Butte Porter, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
and an exotic Kona of some sort.
Right, it's kind of Kona's version of the Hefeweizen with passion fruit.
Wow, that's awesome!
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Sounds like a good evening.
Yeah. Well, hey, I hope you have a good, safe trip home, and I hope your computer's back soon so I can post this podcast for everyone to hear.
Yeah, I hope so too, man. You guys have a good evening.
Really, you and not your technology is the most important thing that gets home safe and sound.
Well, thank you.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Cheers.
Yep, cheers.
All right, there we go. Well, that was Brandon. And we should talk a little bit about the small house that you guys are planning, because this excites me. I'm trying to remember how much I've mentioned about this before. I lived in an RV for about a year and a half.
Nice.
And so I'm familiar with trying to jam all your possessions into a small space.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about how you guys are going about that.
Sure. So Dee Williams and Katie Anderson of Portland Alternative Dwellings are going to be building the little house for us. Katie's kind of the builder. Dee's the designer. So we've been working with Dee to design this little space. And the tiny house kind of looks like a miniature Victorian cottage on wheels. And it's really cute.
Does it look like a dollhouse?
Kind of.
That's the first thing I think of. But
not really. It's kind of like a rustic cabin sort of feel to it. Less dollhousey.
Right.
It's just so small that, you know.
Yeah. It's got really nice proportions. They try and use like the golden mean to figure out the proportions for it. And it's not painted, you know, bright pink or something like a dollhouse, you know, plastic siding. So that helps the
image. Color probably does a lot to kind of stave off that sort of association.
You just have that natural wood color on the outside. And
I love natural stained wood. That's probably one of my favorite. Actually, when I was down in Eugene this weekend, I saw a fellow who was riding a bike that he claimed was from 1946, which had like original leather saddle and wooden fenders on it. So. Wood.
Wow.
Good stuff.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm.
But this house, so it was Dee Williams, you said, is the inspiration?
Yeah.
And I remember.
She's our tiny house hero.
Yeah.
And she's actually a really good friend now, but like 4 years ago, we were at home hanging out. It was New Year's Eve, and I'm like reading a book, Logan's surfing the internet, and Logan's like, dude, you've got to see this video. I'm like, dude, what do you want? I'm reading. And so we watched this video of Dee in her little house, and we were both like, we've got to have this house. And so that's kind of been part of our downsizing process. Like, we always knew we wanted to try and live in something this small, and it's so cute that how can you not want to live in something like this? So.
Yeah,
the ultimate goal, the downsizing direction that we've been going into. So it's been the carrot at the end that we've been pursuing.
The carrot at the end of the funnel, I guess.
Yeah,
just kind of spiraling your way down until you. Yeah, that's cool. I remember I've always been fascinated. I think maybe part of it comes from like when I was growing up, my family had an RV and my parents were both school teachers. And so they had the summers free. We would go on these long vagabonding trips. It wasn't really vagabonding. We'd go to like RV resorts and that sort of thing. And they have hot tubs and that sort of, I mean, hot tubs are great. Just the idea that you'd pack yourself into a small space and that was like your life, you know, and your life consisted of exploration as much, you know, outside, you know, as it did just kind of sitting inside.
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting. Where do you guys plan to park this? Like, where would you?
Good question.
Because when I think of Portland, I think especially the part of Portland you guys live in now is downtown. It's pretty dense. I can't think. All the open space is going to food cart pods.
Right.
So what?
We're looking into a few different options. We might end up in Milwaukee, but we're hoping to be closer to the city center. Yeah. So
that's Milwaukee, Oregon, which is just south of the city.
Yeah, it's cute. Like. The gal we met a few weeks ago, she wants to kind of have like a tiny house village in her backyard. She has a huge backyard. So
nice.
I don't know if that'll pan out, but I think there's enough interest of just friends of friends who are like, hey, you could park in our backyard and we'll host you and we'll of course pay rent or whatever.
Right.
But I think it'll work out.
Mm-hmm. The video I saw from Dee, I think she was parked. Was she parked in a friend's yard?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But she had the video was great because she had the truck that she hooked up to the mobile house, and then she pulled it to kind of towed it out to a new development in the suburbs, and it was like, little house, big house. I like the little house.
Yeah.
It was a good video. It was on our Facebook wall, but I'll put a new link to that up on our website too, so you can all check it out.
Mm-hmm.
But Yeah. So what's the next step from here then? You're in the design phase.
Mm-hmm. We just ordered the trailer foundation for the tiny house, and that should be built in a month, and construction begins in June. So it's coming up really fast, and we're expecting it to be completed by the end of the summer. So probably September, beginning of September, somewhere in there. And we'll be looking for a place to park the entire time. So we'll be sending out a proposal and everything else. And with, you know, food carts in the city's been very open to new ideas
on for sure.
How to alternative living styles. Mm-hmm. So even though the laws on the books are no camping, we can officially recreate in someone's
recreate.
Yes. You have to use the official terminology there.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, that's really, if I had my choice, I would spend all my time recreating.
Yeah,
so why
absolutely.
Not? The other thing it reminds me of is Dignity Village. Are you guys familiar with that setup?
Yeah, some friends of ours that do a TV show called Peak Moment TV actually recently filmed an episode out there. So,
okay.
But please describe.
Yeah, well, basically, I don't know too much more about it. I've visited once or twice, and it's basically, I think the city of Portland has provisions now for, is it either one or two tent cities or portable dwelling cities to be established within the city limits? Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what other places around the country and around the world have done with this whole concept. But here in Portland, it started out as there was a whole group of people who either didn't have a home or were between homes or just basically were sleeping outside. And they started out in Northwest. I think it was kind of under where the 405 bridge touches down into the Alphabet District. And there was some empty parking lots out there. Some folks just set up a place to live and erect tents and that sort of thing. And the city ended up shooing them out. They said, you know, you move along as they often do. Mm-hmm. But the folks banded together, and I'm not sure if fought back is necessarily the right. I think it was done with the best of intentions, the best of spirits, you know, and the best cooperation they could possibly muster. But they convinced the city to let them use an unused tract of land out by the airport, pretty mm-hmm. close to where they make all of their compost and mulch from all the yard debris mm-hmm. that they collect. And basically they said, you know, you can build temporary houses on this concrete lot. So I can't remember how many people live there, but it's basically, yeah, portable without the wheels. I don't think they build these things on wheels, but yeah, basically it's like if they're not anchored to a foundation, you can put them up there. And there's been some great houses that have been built. So
yeah, it's wonderful.
It's a cool deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great that that Portland is supportive of alternative living styles and trying to get a variety of income brackets to keep people from falling off. Off and out of society.
For like, sure.
Yeah.
And at least factions of Portland are helpful in that regard. But,
absolutely.
So it would be interesting if there was, I mean, the small house movement is still kind of small itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of folks that are doing this here in town, although there are folks all over that have various ways to live on a very small structure mm-hmm. and space. But it would be very interesting if there was some sort of, like, basically, I suppose a trailer park, but not as you traditionally
tiny
think
house
of a trailer
village.
Park. Yes,
I'm full
sorry.
Of euphemisms
I
here.
Really shouldn't have said that.
it's a trailer park, but you know, a tiny house village has
right.
a warmer tone. Like
my name is
Brock,
and I put labels on things. But yeah, it's basically the idea that everyone would gather around with kind of a shared vision of how life could be,
absolutely.
and kind of orient that. I imagine that would be a community building experience.
Yeah,
in part because your space is so small, but also just because if you have people that are voluntarily choosing small housing, mm-hmm. you probably share a lot of other things in common as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it would be a super fun project. We'll see what happens in the next 4 or 5 months. I don't know where we'll end up, but it's something that we've talked about a lot. I think it'd be cool to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the tiny house movement has really grown over a period of a few years, and it's fascinating to see the number of like Google hits going up and up exponentially.
Right. Have you been charting the trends?
The hashtags of ours
Greg.
Yeah, Gregory Johnson, who runs the Small House Society,
uh-huh.
He has been tracking that, and it's been a phenomenal exponential growth the last few years.
Yeah,
being just from a few hundred hits to billions of hits, like over a course of a few years. It's and Dee Williams actually built her house in Portland, so mm-hmm. Portland does have some history behind it as far as small houses. Mm-hmm. And I believe Petalpalooza coming up has a tiny house tour.
Is that right?
You can take around in the southeast and in the northeast to view all the little recreation spots or mother-in-law cottages and backyards and seeing how people are living alternatively and reducing their footprint overall.
Totally. Yeah. A friend of mine actually had it was basically a what you might call a mother-in-law sort of apartment. It was a converted garage, which was, I think, just one room with a couple different, the space was well parsed inside. So, you know, it felt like it was a couple different rooms, but essentially just one room. And they lived there for about 2 years or so. And I always thought that was like the coolest thing. I wanted to live in a garage or something like that. So there's something very romantic about it. And maybe, I don't know, do you think, like, is it something that reaches to the, like, some people just get excited about novel living and kind of doing something that's different?
There's something about being simple that you can understand a space that's so small. You think that by living in such a small space, you'd be claustrophobic somehow, but it's actually very comforting. It's like having a big blanket or something that you actually feel warm and you feel defined. And it's compared to like being out in the middle of the ocean where you feel unsettled because there's just all this open space around you. So it's interesting how we think that freedom would be living in a huge house, but with all the bills and everything else that have to come with living in such a large space, that having a tiny house and having money in your pocket and having a simple environment around you, it actually contributes a lot to your happiness.
Yeah. It's a really interesting phenomenon. It's kind of like the, I guess, less is more is probably the aphorism that would go really well with that. But yeah. Damn it. I'm drawing a blank. I had a really good question in mind and it's gone.
I stole it from you. I just interjected something and just derailed your train of thought completely.
Yeah. I mean, you know, not everyone wants to live in 100 square feet and that's fine. But I think, you know, you don't have to live in 4,000 square feet to, you know, have a great life and have fun, like maybe 500 square feet or 1,000 or whatever. And especially like with the implosion in the economy and all this going on. Yeah. I mean, I think people are looking for alternatives and the small house movement is an alternative, like just looking at the world a little bit differently. So,
and like you guys were saying, like the American dream that you started out with in Davis was it's fundamentally unsustainable. Like if you have lots of debt and you owe someone for your education or whatever else you might have acquired, you got to pay that debt down. And then that leaves you, I suppose, especially if because we should probably talk in a minute, too, about the Smalltopia thing that you've written about, because that probably plays into this as well. But if you want to be self-employed, if you want to try and live on less, I guess that goes along with the idea that you have to reduce your expenses. So, so it's nice that you could have a romantic notion of life and something that sounds really exciting and innovative and, you know, something that has all the qualities you're looking for in life, that doesn't cost you an arm and a leg and won't keep you tied to something that you hate. So.
Yeah, our whole society is all about growth. Our economics, our culture, everything is about being bigger and better over time and constantly increasing profits. And that can really tie your hands when it comes to changing what it is that you want to do for careers or anything else. If you have a huge bills, then, hey, it's not possible to try something small and something inexpensive.
Yeah, well, tying people's hands is really not what we're all about. It's not my idea of a good time. So... why don't we talk about you've written some e-books, Tammy.
I have.
Which order would you like to discuss them in, and what would you like to say about them?
Well, I've written two e-books. One is called Simply Car Free, and it's kind of a basic how-to guide for, you know, if you want to go car free, how does that work? Like, what do you need to know? How do you go grocery shopping? What type of bike works for you? Kind of basic stuff, but when I was transitioning to a car-free lifestyle, I had no idea what I was doing, and... You know, with the blog growing, people kept emailing me these questions and I'm like, maybe I could write an ebook on this, and it sold pretty well. So
about getting your feet wet in the most literal way possible.
Yeah.
Sneakers and rain is a terrible combination.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah. That was how I started out. But what were some of the things that you started with? What were like maybe some of the first hurdles that you hopped over?
Well, just stop driving.
Well, it's tempting if it's there. If the car's there, you're going to use it.
Yeah. Well, and the biggest, I guess, push for us is we had two cars and then we went down to one and we finally moved to Sacramento from Davis. And we kept going back and forth. Do we sell the last car? Or do we keep it? And then when we moved to Sacramento, we kept having to move the car for street cleaning. And then we were getting tickets and parking was a pain. And so we were like, let's just sell it. And we weren't really driving it anyways. By that time, we were just biking a lot more. And Eventually you have to take the leap and go for it. But it's hard because cars are so convenient. They get you places quickly.
Wrapped up into your culture. When I was a freshman in college, you didn't think you could date anyone because you had to pick them up in a car. So there's a big cultural gap. So people always ask us, what was the hardest thing to get rid of out of all your possessions? And the car by far. But the challenges that we had really were just kind of selling the car. And then the next challenges were grocery shopping, you know, doing these things that you normally have to do. You know, what route do you get there? How do you lock up your bike? How do you carry stuff? It can be a big challenge. So it's just an adjustment shift. I mean, people have to do that when they drive too. Like people aren't born to drive. They have to eventually learn over time how to drive a car, how to park a car, how to, you know, negotiate around things, learn all the laws. It's pretty similar.
But many people are driven to learn, if you'll pardon the pun. It's a big thing. It's a rite of passage, really. Like busting out of your family life, and no matter how good it is, you it feels good to go out and drive with the windows down and turn up the radio. So,
sign of independence.
That's right. Yeah. Although going back to the dating thing, it is. I will say that the first date that I took my now wife on was actually a bicycling date.
Nice.
We went to the Laurelhurst Theater and we watched a movie about John Lennon.
Wonderful.
And
cool.
And then we stayed around and nobody chased us out, and so we stuck around for the second show, which happened to be Stand By Me, which is a great film.
Aww.
So dating can be done on bicycle if the other person is up for it.
And you can afford, you know, a lot more at the date.
That's
because you're not having to pay for a damn car.
I could have paid for two movies, but we didn't.
Yeah, well, you can afford dessert, you know, at the after party. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
But a part of it too is the economics, you know, what the costs were. And we didn't even realize when we sold the car how much money we were putting into the car until it was gone, and we realized, why do we have this extra several hundred dollars in our account every month? What's going on?
Then weird. It's kind of disconcerting. You're like, wait, what didn't I pay?
Right.
What bills am I missing?
But it was great because we could use that money. Well, we did use that extra money to pay off our debt, which we were now debt free. Yay.
Congratulations.
We started out with about $30,000 in debt overall with car loans and student loans and everything else. And by selling the cars, we were able to get rid of that debt in about 2 years.
That's great.
And I graduated graduate school debt free. So
congratulations, sir. That's well done.
Yeah. There's some other things involved too with fellowships and scholarships, but the car free being, that was by far the biggest contributor to getting us out of it.
That's nice. And let's see. So that was paying down debt, you're selling your cars. What else as far as just like bicycles being a good thing and getting rid of your car, what else is helpful to know?
It's just fun. Like, I love riding my bike. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
I don't like driving. When we go on trips, I'm like, Logan, will you drive? I'm scared.
And it's the freedom from waiting, too.
One
thing we noticed, you know, trying to wait for the bus and, you know, waiting for friends to pick you up, or you're waiting in traffic if you're driving. And when you're on a bike, you really aren't waiting for anything.
You can hop
on your bike. You can go in the direction you want to go and just have a fantastic time with the wind blowing in your hair.
Master of your own destiny.
Yeah, and feel your heart pumping in your chest and getting, you know, healthy exercise and really low impact exercise and feeling empowered.
The one thing I do wish is that we lived in Copenhagen or Amsterdam or some other place where it was okay to bicycle without a helmet. Around here, it just doesn't feel safe to me, but maybe I'll get over that. Maybe someday I'll just ditch it.
Hey, but we have a friend, Dave Fecht, who runs PortlandEyes.com, and he just wrote a great post on going without a helmet.
Is that right?
His rationale for going without a helmet. And he makes a pretty strong case for riding without a helmet, so you may have to check that out.
Well, yeah, well, I'm going to read that, and then we'll put a link to that so other people can as well. That's a good idea.
Yeah, terrific.
Nice. Anything else about the car ebook that you wanted to summarize or tell about?
Not that I can think
of.
Okay,
good enough. I'm sure it's a good book. I didn't read it. I was absorbed with the other one, and then of course things got busy towards the end of the week. So I can't say that I read it, but I intend to. So I'm excited about that. But the other one, Smalltopia, is the one that I was really excited about and dug into, because that's something that's kind of been on my mind recently. Is like I would love to be farther away from depending on one source of income for everything. You know, and that being like my. The best thing ever. So tell us about Smalltopia. What's that book about?
Well, it's basically a practical guide to working for yourself, and it's a guide. I mean, it's not like a tome of a book or a tomb or whatever.
Right. And you're not guaranteeing that people are going to hit financial success. It's no, just advice.
It is advice. Bad. It's based on my story
and
what I've learned along the way. But there's a lot of micro actions in it. And I've found in my experience by taking these small little steps over time, mm-hmm. you can build a small business. You can pay off your debt. You can sell your cars. I mean, I think in a lot of ways, like Smalltopia, like some of the principles goes beyond just building a business. It can reach into other areas of your life too. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Nice. What'd you think? Did you like it?
I loved it. Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that was really interesting was you had a bunch of guest authors that came in and wrote chapters about kind of how they decided to disconnect and quit their day jobs and do something else that was more in line with their own passions.
Yay, community.
Seriously. Yeah. Hey, that's a good thing. And actually, Russ and Laura wrote a chapter for you, mm-hmm. which was cool. It was good. It's always good to get a little more content from them.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that it's just the idea that one job won't take care of you. And I mean, I've done a bunch of reading, some books I liked, some books I didn't. Your Money or Your Life is one book I read that was a fantastic
read. I love that book.
Really good, written with heart. There's another one about dads and economic status, which I won't name, that I thought was not necessarily very well written. I mean, I understand the principles he was writing from, the author, but it was also it was written from the perspective of this is so easy and anybody can do it. And it kind of seemed like a throw caution to the wind sort of thing. So, mm-hmm. But I think there are a lot of things that you can do, whether or not I like the book. There are a lot of principles you can gather from people that are writing about that sort of thing. Just the idea that your job won't necessarily take care of you forever, you know? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's nice to have employment and it's nice to have mm-hmm. retirement funds and that sort of thing. But it's also nice to have maybe a bit more understanding about how your own personal finances work, about how financial systems in general work, and to be able to plan around that maybe a bit more than some people do. And not expecting either the man or a man or some other, you know, some other entity to take care of you and give you a nice place to curl up when you die.
Sure. So
Generation X, Y, et cetera, stopped believing in pensions after Enron collapsed. That was definitely a big turning point. It was like, you know what? I don't think you can really work for a company for 30 years and depend on
right,
them to
right.
take. So our generations from here on out are definitely trying to go for the multiple small income sources and
right.
trying to reduce expenses. And definitely people are already driving less with, I think, gas we saw this morning was $4.19 a gallon. So mm-hmm. that's a huge dent in people's pocketbooks. So
it's a little tricky. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The job that I work is it's a union job and I'm a union member, just kind of de facto. I have to be, I guess, to have my job. But it is interesting. Like the mentality that I see with a lot of my coworkers, there's a lot of sitting around the break room and swilling weak coffee and kind of complaining that the benefits aren't what they used to be. And, you know, it's a, you can sit around and you can do that or you can get busy. And mm-hmm. I mean, to their credit, I think a lot of my coworkers are also, doing lots of things. School bus driving is a great job to do if you're retired. You know, it's just kind of like an income source and you can work on your own project. Like I know a guy who's a writer who actually, I think at one time in his life, rode his bicycle 25 miles each way to a construction job in Louisiana
wow.
or something like that. So I need to get him to tell that story someday. But yeah. Anyways, all that to say that, yeah, it is nice to kind of disconnect and not depend on somebody else to do your thinking for you when it comes to finances.
Mm-hmm.
So
for sure.
That's cool. I'm glad you wrote about that.
Thanks.
And you got a book deal coming up here.
Possibly a
real book. That's air quotes for those who can't see.
Versus an ebook.
It's a printed book.
Yeah. So my literary agent, he's been shopping our proposal around for a few months, and we got a couple bites. And so we've been talking to the editors at the publishing company, and we're going to make a decision this coming week about who we're going to go with. And so hopefully I can sign with publisher X or Y. And
and what's the new book about?
I've heard better things about Y, but so, go ahead.
So essentially the book's going to be about our downsizing story along with some of the latest happiness research that's out there. So really talking about how living with less can make you a whole lot happier and Yeah, it should be kind of cool. I'm excited.
This Excellent. Whole process was kicked off. Tammy was featured in the New York Times, the cover page of the Sunday Business section
Very
in
nice.
August. And it really launched a lot of fanfare for Rowdy Kittens, and she got a lot of attention for it. We ended up being on the Today Show, CNN, yeah. MSNBC, and it really got a lot of attention, and it gave Tammy's writing and her expertise a lot more validation, as it were, from the traditional media. So it's been wonderful to try and engage this new audience and to pursue this new direction and to take a risk a little bit to kind of go in this different direction away from blogging. So it's been a fun ride.
I'll still be blogging.
Right.
That's good.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, it'll be an interesting process. It's definitely the publishing world it just moves slower than like blogging world or producing your own ebook. But
right. Well, you have to print it onto the pages, right?
Well, there's
it just
that.
Takes time.
And I don't know. And I'll have an editor. That'll be awesome.
Right.
It's nice. You don't have to do all that yourself. Or Logan, are you forced into the editor's role?
He is a lot.
Or you do it by choice. Maybe you're just
volunteer.
You're a good person.
Yay. Yeah. No, he's a great editor. So
that's
I
good.
Appreciate him.
Very good. That's fantastic. Well, before we sign off, we're getting close to our end time, but Rowdy Kittens, I think you have an explanation of this on your website, but just for those who may not have been there yet, why Rowdy Kittens? Why the name?
So I started Rowdy Kittens.
It sounds cute.
It is. It's a cool name. I like it.
It's catchy.
How long? Three, four years ago, I was at my day job and I was sitting around, you know, the conference table on a break with my colleagues. And I'm like, hey, I want to start a blog, but I don't know what to name it. And I want to write about simplicity and being car free and all this stuff. And someone's like, what do you name it? And someone said, hey, how about Rowdy? And then someone said, kittens, Rowdy Kittens. And so that's how the name came to be.
Tammy is definitely a fan. We have two cats at home, so she likes cats, but she's also pretty rowdy. So
very nice.
The name hybrid came together, and it's catchy. it comes out. People remember the name. So
that's nice. I'm a big fan of cats myself. I think they're cuddly.
They are.
But yeah,
and memorable.
Was there anything else you guys want to throw out of the world before we wrap this whole thing up?
Not that I can think of. Thanks for having us.
No, I'm glad you guys could come out. I'm glad you could share a couple of beers. And glad I got to see your Surly Longhaul Truckers. Those are
great,
sexy bikes, if I do say so.
They are. So,
yeah. Well, let's give you some of the... I've got to find my thing here. And there we go. The credits. You can find us on the internet at thesprocket.podbean.com. You can send us suggestions for topics, guests, drinks, or anything else you'd like to see on the program. Musical artists, that's the one thing I almost forgot to say. If you know a band that's independent and you like them, send us a link, and we'll get in touch with them. Maybe we can get them on the show. The message line to call us is 503-847-9774. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Find him on the internet at myspace.com/RyanJLane. Hurtbird, the band, provided our headline sounder. That's hurtbirdmusic.com. My name is Brock.
Tammy Strobel.
Logan Smith.
And this has been the Sprocket Podcast. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week on the flip side. And I'm going to patch that in because I don't have that set up, but we'll take care of that later.
Crazy.
I just learned something new about my soundboard.
Awesome.
That's cool.